Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning's Edition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Welcome aboard. How are you? Nice to see you, Mark Riley. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
Nice to see you, Kalo. The Costco ho comes in with a mound of pasta, meatball, sausage. Just sitting there. Is that breakfast for a person? What is that?
That is breakfast for me, my friend.
All right, man. All right, just rub it in. I get it. I'm eating meat. It's a meat and pasta day for Kalo.
Big meat and pasta day.
So good.
Two times.
All right. Well, you know, it's leftovers. Leftovers are better than the night you have them, as we've discussed before.
Yeah, but you know, I used to fiend on stuff like that, you know, with the meatballs and the sausage and the marinara. Yeah, I used to, but back when I ate red meat.
Well, man, I was trying to figure out what the hell it was when Cross was here. Dave Cross was in the studio the other day, and when I used to live with him over there in Somerville, Massachusetts, there was this place called High Five Pizza around the corner. He used to make this sub that had like four meats. It was like bacon, meatballs, sausage, and cheesesteak. You know, you just like, and we'd be eating those things at like 12:30 at night, and wake up with this, you know, there's a knot of flesh in your colon, you know. But, so it finally happened, man. I'm walking through Queens, and this girl comes up to me, man. Comes up to me, like, starry-eyed. Okay, looks at me and goes, are you Sam Cedar?
And I said, oh, my God.
I said, close. Mark Maron. She goes, that's what I meant. Mark, you're right. You know, one screaming Jew is no different than the other screaming Jew. And she goes, no, I'm serious. I love your show. You know, you're really helping us, and, you know, and we're helping, and it's great. I'm so appreciative of it. You know, and I was like, okay, thanks. But, I know she probably felt a little bad. Maybe not. But as I was walking away, it's like I was really nice of her. But, Sam Cedar, how did that, you know what I mean? But I guess it's kind of looking similar. I don't know. I'm not wearing a bow tie. And
well, she didn't mistake you for Franken.
I don't see how that can happen. But it was nice. It was a good day. So then I go over to the fish store. I'm walking down the street, Riley, and the guys at the Marino's fish store, Marino Brothers fish store. I'm walking by, and I hear the whistle, like, yo, you know what I mean? Like, what? He's like, come here, you know what I mean? He's like, we heard you yesterday talking about the store. We heard you. He said, you sound good.
Uh-oh.
And he gave me a very nice deal on Snapper. Is that payola? Does fish count as payola?
Snapola.
Does two fillets count as payola? I'm going to be brought into court. It's like, you have been accepting fish.
The new head of the FCC is going to make a special trip to New York to deal
with
you.
What about that? What about that guy? I mean, what about Stensenbrenner?
Oh, Sensenbrenner?
Sensenbrenner. Let me, before we get into this, because we're gonna lead up to an interview I did with Jerry Stahl, the author of Permanent Midnight. His new book is I, Fat. He's written many books. I'll get into that a little more. And because he was sort of under attack by Brent Bozell's Parents Television Council, and I talked to him out there when I was in Los Angeles a couple weeks ago at his house, and today is delay day, all right, because the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack is going to be drawn and quartered, and we've got it for you today. This guy is going down. So a bulk of the show is going to be dedicated to, taking down delay. I don't want to call it delay gate, because I don't want to use gate, but maybe we should. It was a suggestion from a listener, but this dude is going down. You know, the jig is up, the jury is in. He canceled an event that he was supposed to headline, the Judicial War on Faith, the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration, a Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade Front organization, had him headlining this attack on the American judiciary, and he bailed to go to the Pope's funeral because he cares so much about the Pope. I don't think so. I think that George, the neocon death cult blow monkey puppet leader, said, look, buddy, we have to have a sit-down. I wouldn't be surprised, Riley, if when he comes back, you know, he has to step down as majority leader. What do you think?
I think you may be right. I think that Tom DeLay and George W. Bush will have an opportunity, I guess, to speak maybe in Rome or maybe at the airport
plane.
At Heathrow.
Just in case he cries.
Yeah. I mean, look, this guy is so caught up and so wrapped up in nonsense that is totally of his own making. He did this. He's responsible for it. Front page of the New York and Washington newspapers, the flagships, the Times here in New York and the Washington Post. What do they got? Tom DeLay. Two different stories now. This is not a situation where each one is carrying the same thing. Here in New York, they're talking about the fact that Tom DeLay's wife and his daughter were getting paid to the tune of $500,000 since 2001 for event planning.
Yeah, they got nothing. And now this trip to Russia, to Moscow, that was clearly paid for by lobbying.
1997, yes.
I mean, the accusations are broad, you know, and they're specific as well. But, you know, like accusations against Tom DeLay range from offering political favors in exchange for a vote. Clearly he's done that. Soliciting campaign contributions in return for legislative favors. Improperly involving a federal agency in a Texas partisan matter. Illegally funneling corporate funds to assist state political campaigns, using a charity for children as a personal political fund, taking three separate trips costing over $200,000, paid for by lobbyists who wanted to influence legislation, using his political action and campaign committees to funnel over $500,000 to his wife and daughter, supposedly for their work on his campaign. Right? After he was admonished three times in unanimous votes by the bipartisan House Ethics Committee, DeLay used his power to replace the Republican chair and two other Republican members of the committee, inserting close allies, two of whom donated to DeLay's legal defense fund. He also had the rules of the committee changed to try to ensure that he would not be admonished again. And on top of that, Bill Frist separating himself from DeLay and his batch of treasons, of traitors. These guys want to usurp the judiciary branch of the government, you know, on top of other things. You know, he is definitely dirty and corrupt and going down.
He's, look, his wife and his daughter, when they work for any kind, when they work for him, that's got to be disclosed, okay? And exactly what they did has got to be disclosed. This is the disclosure form definition of what Christine DeLay, DeLay's wife, and his only child, Danny DeLay Farrow, were doing. They were described as, their payments were described as, quote, fundraising fees, campaign management, or, quote, payroll, with no additional details on how they actually earned the money.
And as you said, if they should have known that these things were being paid for by lobbyists, and they should have told DeLay, and if they didn't, I think they deserve a cut in pay.
Well, yeah, I would think so. Now here is a DeLay spokesperson describing the work that these two housefraus are doing. Mrs. DeLay provides big picture, long-term strategic guidance and helps with personnel decisions. Ms. Farrow is a skilled and experienced professional event planner who assists ARMPAC, which is his fundraising arm, in arranging and organizing individual events.
Wow. This is a, what do you call that? Nepotism, isn't it?
That's beyond nepotism.
Intimate cronyism. Before we get more into DeLay, I want to set this up properly. Representative F. James Sensenbrenner, the third Republican of Wisconsin, told cable industry executives attending the National Cable and Telecommunications Association conference that in terms of enforcing indecency regulations, quote, I prefer using the criminal process rather than the regulatory process, end quote. Sensenbrenner said people who are in flagrant disregard should face criminal process rather than regulatory process. That, quote, that is the way to go. Aim the cannon specifically at the people committing the offenses rather than the blunderbuss approach. Just the fact that this guy used the word blunderbuss shows how out of touch he is. It's 2005.
Yeah, not 1840.
And maybe people who commit so-called acts of indecency should be drawn and quartered. Put him in the socks immediately. I heard him say booby. His voice came out of a little box with all the voices in it. It's the devil's work. Cast it out of your homes, dear citizens. I beseech you. What does a person who uses the word blunderbuss consider smut anyways? What offends this moron? Milady should be covering her ankles lest they offend. Hey, but anyway, indecency, slippery slope, who defines it? You know, what does it really mean? When we come back, I'm going to share with you a conversation I had with Jerry Stahl. He wrote two of the most controversial episodes of CSI, and also, ironically, the most highly watched episodes. We'll talk to him when we come back, 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, actually 20. Why do I watch the clock? Why do I do that? I'm trying to be a pro.
It's there.
Hey, look at that. Just changed. So I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. The show is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Yes, you are.
In a little bit, a few minutes, actually. We're going to be hearing an interview I did with Jerry Stahl, the writer. But let's talk about indecency. Let's talk about how the GOP's moral agenda is starting to slip. People are starting to doubt them. People are starting to see through it, Riley. They're starting to realize that these guys aren't really about morality. They're about invading our privacy. They're about, you know, sort of, you know, hijacking the government and turning it over on a populist level to a bunch of religious fanatics while they pilfer the country and the world. These guys are cutting and running, and they're just, you know, trying to just, you know, leave it in the hands of the fanatics that will guarantee them power for a few more years to come, but it's not going to happen.
I'm going to tell you something, man. Yeah. When I hear and see these kinds of things, I really believe, and I see this as certainly in terms of homophobic behavior as well, it's something inside the people that are pushing this sort of thing. There's something inside them that they find indecent about themselves.
Yeah,
that pushes that they're projecting onto other people.
Absolutely. I'm dirty. I'm dirty inside. I can't face it. You should repent.
You face it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know about James Sensenbrenner. I don't know the guy. I don't, you know, nothing personal or anything.
Sure.
I know he's a Republican. I know he's from Wisconsin. He is the chair of one of the important congressional committees dealing with entertainment. And he had the stones to go to the National Cable and Telecommunications Association conference on Monday and say that criminal prosecution would be more efficient than regulatory prosecution when it comes to indecency. Now, the problems with this jump out at you virtually as soon as he gets these words out of his mouth. Number one, and Mark, you mentioned this before the break. Who defines indecency?
Yeah, what the hell is that? You get this guy trying to say this stuff about, you know, indecency and about it being prosecuted as a criminal offense. You get that, you know, that Senator Cornyn from Texas, you know, trying to instigate, you know, fanatic religious nuts to you know, to be violent towards judges, sitting judges. What the hell is going on here? Where are we? Is this pilgrim time? What is it?
Well, see, this is more and more Americans seem to be asking that question. There was a USA Today CNN Gallup poll, and by 55-40%, respondents said Republicans, traditionally the party of limited government, are trying to use the government to interfere with the private lives of most Americans on moral values. 53-40%. They say Democrats are not trying to interfere on moral issues. A lot of this is coming out of the Terry Schiavo case, but we see, Mark, perhaps classic Republican right-wing evangelical overreaching in terms of thinking they got a mandate, thinking that they can pursue this multifaceted agenda to change the way Americans live. And it goes across the board here.
Yeah.
It goes from Social Security to indecency to the Patriot Act, and we're going to talk about all of these as we go through our morning here. But what we're talking about and what we're looking at is a gradual, incremental erosion of American freedom.
Well, that's because people see that, you know, metaphorically speaking, people are starting to sense that the Republican Party basically climbed into bed with a comatose, dying woman, you know, and used her, which is, on some metaphoric level, that is tantamount to rape, and I think people smell it.
Yeah, and certainly when it comes to this latest poll, the GOP agenda, but you know what? What's fascinating about this, Mark, is that they appear to be trying to push it through anyway. Now, we saw many politicians cool to the Schiavo thing when they started seeing polling saying that most Americans disagreed with their position. I'm beginning to wonder now whether some of the more allegedly astute Republican politicians will also, just like they're backing away from Tom DeLay, just like Bill Frist and the rest of these guys are peeling off, well, maybe some of these, maybe Sensenbrenner will get hung out to dry the same way, that he won't find a Republican consensus for criminalizing indecency, that he won't find a Republican consensus, you know, Ted Stevens, the senator from Mr. Let's Drill in the Arctic, also wants to extend indecency statutes to include the cable television business.
What shameless, self-hating bastards these guys must be to impose this on us. They're going to tell us what we can even pay to watch in our homes. They're going to take the curse words out of the Sopranos. It's weird enough right now. You know, you and I, you know, can't use free language.
But,
you know,
that's right.
You know what's interesting, though, is how, you know, touchy people can get about foul language, just in terms of, like, I know as a comic that, you know, if you don't use it properly, it can get a little irritating. I've actually watched myself perform sometimes, and you know, when they move the HBO special over to regular television, to Comedy Central, and it's just like, hey, I got, and then when I, and then you hear the audience go, yeah, but everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
What just happened? I mean, I understand that, but you know, that's just a matter of overusing.
That taste, though, that's not a matter of indecency. It's not a matter of obscenity. People should be aware that they want to step into your living room and tell you, during a time when the technology to block offensive material has never been more widely available or more technologically easy to use.
Yeah.
And they still want to do this stuff.
Wait, isn't it all taste outside of breaking the law? On some level, I mean, isn't it all taste, Riley?
But that's Sensenbrenner's point. He wants to make indecency literally a criminal offense.
No, I know that, but I mean defining indecency.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It just seems to me that everything, no matter how lewd or crude, if you're not, hurting somebody, killing somebody, or taking advantage of somebody who is a victim in a situation, either because of age or whatnot, that anything is really taste, and that what they would be doing is regulating taste, you know, because there can't be, I just don't know how they would begin to even define those laws.
You know, the most cynical part of all this is that all of these guys will hold up the children as the reason why they go through all of this nonsense. But the fact of the matter is, again, you can stop children. Good parents can stop children from watching stuff that they should not be able to watch. And the idea that you are going to regulate all of media based on what you don't want children to see is absolutely absurd. The media business will go broke, and they know this already.
And really good parents can support their children's misunderstanding of what they've just seen if they happen to see something.
If they happen to see something. That's called parenting. It work, yes. But you can do it, ladies and gentlemen. And at a point, we're all going to have to do it so that these morons do not end up dictating what we can see and what we can't.
Jerry Stahl is going to be on in just a second. We talked about this very issue in terms of infantilism and the King Baby episode of CSI, which he wrote. It's a very, very funny conversation.
I want to see that. It must be on DVD. We'll be right back, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Pascal, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio. Whose version of Satellite of Love is that, Caleb?
It's Lou Reed, but I don't know who did the remix.
It's very nice. It is nice. I never heard this. One of my favorite songs in the world.
Really?
It is, my friend. There's a couple of Lou Reed songs that are right up there with my favorite songs in the world. Ramon just came by with his luggage. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. Many, many scandals are starting to reach critical mass. So Ramon got his hands on DeLay's Palm Pilot, and apparently either he's getting on the plane with DeLay to the Pope's funeral, or he's getting out of town. 7 p.m. How about a.m.? 7 a.m. Wake up. Read about myself on the front pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post. Prepare for the end of days. 9 a.m. Assemble defense team. Put wife and daughter on the payroll. Remember, the best defense is a good offense. 11 a.m., gather staff for document shredding and hard drive erasing party. No one must find out about the Ooker Hay Erder May. 1 p.m., call Michigan Militia. Tell them to put Operation Activist Judge Safari on hold. Initiate Operation Protect the Hammer. 3 p.m., distribute cyanide capsules and sidearms to staff. We'll just see who's loyal here. 7 p.m., pray to God for advice, but tell him I'm going to have to drop him from the payroll just until this blows over, Lord. That's that. So now, I was out in L.A., and Jerry Stahl is my friend.
You might know him as the author of Permanent Midnight, Plainclothes Naked, Purr of a Love Story. His newest book, I, Fatty, a first-person, almost autobiographical book on Fatty Arbuckle, the tragedy of Fatty Arbuckle, the framing of Fatty Arbuckle. Great writer. You can also see him briefly in Permanent Midnight as Dr. Murphy. But we had a conversation recently. He's apparently, you know, Bruckheimer has taken a liking to him, and he writes a couple episodes of CSI a year. And two that he wrote, which really got the sort of the attention of the Parents Television Council of Brent Bozell. They really started a little letter writing campaign. Bozell even tried to sue over Changes, which was an episode involving transgenders, transsexuals, and the surgery that got them that way. But there were a couple other ones. There was Fur and Loathing about plushies. You know what plushies are?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jerry Stahl knows what plushies are. Plushies are people that like to have sexual activities wearing giant animal suits of different kinds.
So what?
Yes. So there's a whole episode on that. But the episode that I talked to him about was an episode called King Baby, which is one of the most bizarre things I've seen on television. It revolves around a casino owner who was found dead in front of his house from jumping from the balcony naked, laying there on the steps. And as the story unfolds, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but I guess it's already aired a couple of times. But apparently, you know, his wife came home, and before she called the police, removed his diaper. Okay? The guy was an infantilist, which was someone who fetishizes, you know, behaving like an infant, and he had, you know, but as the story unfolds, it's just great. It's provocative stuff and darkly funny. You know, the great thing about Stahl is that, you know, he's really able to hone in on the most, you know, the dark crevices of human sexuality, but also I thought there was a real sense of humor in how could you not have a sense of humor when you see, you know, a 60-year-old man crawling on the floor in a diaper going, gag, I mean, how is that not going to be funny? There's a scene where Grissom, played by William Peterson, and the other guy, played by George Eads, you know, go into this large baby store for baby people. And the woman looks at Peterson and says something to the extent, or looks at Eads and says something along the lines of, is Daddy going to buy you some presents today? Genius, you know, just genius. And there's a conversation I had with Jerry at his house about the accusation from the Parents Television Council and about the type of writing he does for television.
I am talking to Jerry Stahl, the author of Permanent Midnight, I, Fatty, the most recent book, and also Perv, A Love Story, yes?
Yes,
and,
thank you.
And he was, you know, the film Permanent Midnight, obviously now a writer of the two most powerfully disturbing yet popular episodes of CSI. Here, dig this. And I'm quoting from Aubrey Bowling, the woman who wrote this piece for the piece.
Although we don't know that she's the woman. Because
we don't know. Parents Television Council. I'll have to check that. My producer will check that. But, quote, the scenes of the adult in the large diapers acting like an infant and being diapered by a young woman are creepy and disturbing to watch. Exactly. A child who happened to see the King Baby episode of CSI would have been violated and confused by this glimpse into a very rare and extremely twisted fetish.
It's so true.
According to Nielsen data, nearly 2 million children under the age of 18 were watching the sick and disturbing episodes, and some of the 2-year-olds could actually identify with the guy felt comforted by it.
Yeah, they thought, you know, maybe all that isn't so bad. Mommy will always be there. I like to think I'm bringing some hope. But also, it's not just me. I mean, they handle it in such a way that the genius of the show is they don't judge when they're on the, you know, they're just doing their job. So it's a Rorschach test. I mean, the reaction of the viewer determines, you know, whether the show is considered clinically insane, worthy of putting the writer in jail, or just good, clean, wholesome entertainment, you know, on the show. Just as, because it was kind of a feel-good show.
Yeah.
On the King,
King Baby.
On the King Baby, he didn't just wear a diaper. He was given an LSD enema.
Right.
Which is battle routine.
Wait, but you know what? Back when that was popular, you know, a lot
sure.
of people, it didn't get the attention it deserved.
No. I'm reliving the past.
Yeah.
Bringing it back.
Yeah. So what were some of the nuances of that character? Because I didn't see
Did you say nuance?
Nuance.
Talking to the wrong writer.
Yeah.
Nuance? Subtlety?
No, not your bag.
Well,
but what did
you hate to talk about nuance?
Did you have to research infantilism? You must have a little bit. Huh?
Sure. Yeah, great researcher. They have a great researcher on that.
What are the numbers like? How many infantilists are there? Is there a lot? No. No, you don't know.
Your friends and neighbors.
Yeah, you never know, right?
No, they're huge. As a matter of fact, we got the magazines.
Come on.
Oh, my God. It's hysterical.
Are there magazines?
So there's drinkers and then there's stinkers.
Drinkers and stinkers.
Drinkers and stinkers. Drinkers are into the breast milk and that aspect of it.
Okay.
Stinkers just like to kind of soil themselves and be taken care of. Shame-based.
Yeah. Now, the whole LSD enema, though, that's what you brought to the table. You're like, this is where we're going to go with this. That was a moment of cathartic enlightenment, wasn't it?
It's like, gee, is it... Everybody loves Raymond, or should we watch a guy in a diaper getting an LSD enema? You know, it's like we're just giving them some choice. It's about choice.
It's all about choice. That's what democracy is about, and that's what it should be about. Well, what my question is to you, and I don't know if you can answer it necessarily, is that it seems to me that television companies, you know, Viacom, CBS, will honor their complaints, even though many of them, if they get 10,000 complaints from the Parents Television Council, they're probably from three people.
Because, you know, they're all identical.
Yeah, I know, but why do they honor them? Why do they even rethink things? Why do they even say publicly, like, well, maybe we should... Clearly they don't.
First of all, I have to give a little, you know,
prop
to CSI, because they still run the stuff. They've not backed down.
Oh, good.
So, obviously, they'd be idiots, because they're scared of losing a sponsor, but no sponsor in their right mind is going to jump off the most popular show in the world.
So that's what it is about. It's about advertising. So do you think that...
I don't know if it's about... I mean, isn't all television about getting sponsors?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's...
So the real worry is, obviously, is whether or not enough people get pissed off to say, well, look, you know, we're not going to, if a sponsor pulls out, if the sponsor that is sympathetic with the Christian right.
I don't think it's even about whether they're sympathetic philosophically. I think they're not fools, and the numbers are there, and I don't know of any sponsors pulling their show, because there'd be other ones getting in line.
I'm talking to Jerry Stahl, the author of I, Fatty, and the author of the King Baby episode of CSI. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Seven past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're sort of in the middle of an interview I did with author Jerry Stahl in Los Angeles. We'll finish that in a second. Let's get the liberal agenda done here. Here it is from the Streisand compound. Write these down. Liberal soldiers, here are your marching orders for today. One, don't hide your joy about Tom DeLay's misfortunes. An erection is a perfectly natural reaction. You know, why can't we rate? Can we gender balance that? A clitoral engorgement, also. Two, even though it hasn't launched yet, complain that Al Gore's new TV network isn't progressive enough. Three, the next telemarketer that calls, lecture him about Kyrgyzstan. Kyrgyzstan? Four, mourn the passing of Prince Rainier. Despite pressure from Bush, he refused to send a squad of croupiers to Iraq. You know. Five, today's phrase, just drop this into conversation. You ever wonder what's happening during all this dead Pope stuff, man? It's not good. Wake up, sheeple. We're the ones getting stiffed.
Ooh.
Did they move the dead wizard? Has he been moved to the basement yet?
No, they have to do the funeral first, I think.
That's today? Do we know?
Tomorrow. No, I'm sorry. Friday is the funeral.
Friday is the funeral. That's right. And Tom DeLay's, to go to the funeral as opposed to headline the big Kill the Judges conference on Thursday. But we're going to get into DeLay in just momentarily. I want to finish this interview with Jerry Stahl. Jerry Stahl, the author of Permanent Midnight, Plain Clothes, Naked, Perv, A Love Story, the most recent book, I, Fatty, about sort of a first-person autobiographical, though written by Jerry, about Fatty Arbuckle and the travails and framing of Fatty Arbuckle. It's a very interesting look at the comedic personality. Well, he wrote two of the most popular episodes of CSI and also two that got the most flack from the Parents Television Council. Brent Bozell actually sued over the episode Chicha Changes, which was written by Jerry Stahl. Here's our discussion in lieu of Stenzenbrenner, Representative James Stenzenbrenner, F.J. Stenzenbrenner, wanting to make indecency a criminal act, whatever the hell that means. Here's the rest of my conversation with Jerry.
I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. I'm here with Jerry Stahl in his house. I'm not even going to say where you live. I'm not going to, you know, because I know you like your privacy, and I'm sure it's only a matter of
time. And so many people care.
Exactly. As soon as I say Jerry Stahl, that they'll be up here, they'll be outside with signs.
Those who aren't going Jerry who?
Yeah. Come on. Well, that's the weird thing is that if I could find the piece here, because I went to the website of the Brent Bozell's parents.
Brent Bozell, right.
PTC, Parents Television Council.
Not to be confused with the PMRC.
Right, exactly.
Which is James. They're rival groups.
Yeah, are they?
James Dobson.
James Dobson and James. Brent Bozell.
Brent Bozell.
Yes.
They actually wrestle naked to see who gets to send out petitions that week.
These new guys, these guys are mobilizing people about important stuff, Jerry. Television.
They really are. They really are, yeah.
Well, let me, it's interesting that the woman who wrote this, Aubrey Bowling, I'm assuming is a woman.
Aubrey can be a man's name.
I know, exactly. But, you know, and Aubrey, you know, in the context of Christian, you know, Christo-fascist zombie
brigade. She's hot. She's really hot.
She's got to be. But she,
she's a Christian.
Yes. She uses the word, the CSI franchise, I'm quoting, has explored almost every facet of human sexuality, but has a tendency to focus on the most deviant and debauched in episodes that are calculated to shock, titillate, and push the envelope of television decency. That sounds like something you put on your resume, isn't it? I mean, theoretically.
It's a career maker for me.
Exactly.
My only problem is, you know, how do you top it?
But the thing is like the two episodes that they got the most upset about, the Parents Television Council, which is King Baby, which is one,
mm-hmm.
and you wrote that one, and it was...
And I wrote the other one, Changes.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, thank you.
And King Baby was... These two episodes were the most highly viewed as well, right? I mean, didn't it get, like, the highest ratings of any CSI? Did I read that properly?
That's the irony, yes.
And the King Baby episode, it focuses on infantilism, which is one of the lesser-known, less popular fetishes, which I think deserves attention. You know, how many people know about that? It's important to get those guys out there. You don't want some guy in diapers sitting home in his basement mad.
Why not me?
Yeah, feeling alone, you know?
You know, what I like to think is there are people who feel so left out and so alienated. And I think if you can sort of...
bring them into the fold.
Mainstream them.
Yeah, exactly.
Mainstream them. You know, give some prime time.
Now, I guess what the issue is that she says one of the big problems with something like this is it's basically a guidebook on how to be an infantilist. Mm. That, you know, they're going to, you know, what this is going to do, if there's a 16-year-old watching, that the first thing he's going to say is like, wow, I'm going to get me some diapers, some breast milk. Which is, that's a ridiculous accusation.
I don't know. You know, I think as the boomers get older, depends are going to be trendy.
Yeah.
And there's always the kid who wants to be like, you know, an adult. Many kids want to be adults when they're younger. So they're going to rush right from puberty to diapers, and they're going to skip adolescence. And in that sense, that could be a tragedy.
Let's talk about first. Let's talk about how you said that this is really the only medium that you can do this in.
For me, the irony is, you know, because I write books and, you know, movies and stuff, I hate this word transgressive because it's so like, ooh, look at me, I'm transgressive. But the fact is, the most transgressive stuff I've been able to do has been on primetime network television. I mean, I've covered cannibalism, sex change operations, and now infantilism, just ripping the lid off.
And you're encouraged by the producers to do this, or when you show up with it, they go like, oh, my God, can we do this? Let's do it. Like, do they literally get a feeling when they read your stuff of sort of like, man, can we do this? We've got to try it.
Well, you know, I'm contracted to a couple a year, and that's what I bring to the table.
They want the Jerry Stahl. Where's the Jerry Stahl feel?
Write about what you know.
Yeah. Now, what do you think these people want? People like Brent Bozell, people like James Dobson. I mean, are they really about protecting children? What are they, you know, what is their means to an end, and how does it, you know, either affect you? Does it get you pissed off? Do you know what I mean?
It's just amusing. It's the irony of the drug war as well. It's like, let's go down to Colombia and spray all the plants,
mm-hmm.
and let's not even address the fact that they wouldn't be growing the plants if they... people weren't clamoring for the drugs all over America. Let's forget that.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's a boring, mundane, and obvious point, but the fact is, like you say, these are the most watched, and it's not like people don't know what they're getting because they promote the hell out of them, and obviously people want to see the other.
Why is CSI so popular?
In the case of, all I can talk about is my episodes.
Okay.
I mean, I can't argue for the show.
Okay.
Obviously it taps into something.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's just, people are really fascinated with, you know, what goes on in their bodies. you know, and people are also body obsessed in America. And CSI, it's basically like fun with your intestines. You know, it's the it just shows all kind of stuff happening.
It's the legacy of your rotting corpse. It's the legacy of
in the pre-rot stage. I mean, look, it's just a chance to be paid to explore really arcane areas of humanity, which, as you say, are weirdly and, to me, unexpectedly fascinating to mainstream America. What it just reveals is that these, God bless our, you know, our Bible-embracing friends for fighting the good fight, but God made the man who craves enemas and diapers. So I think to reject him, I'm sorry, but, you know, there's an enema god up there somewhere.
Yeah.
He's getting slapped in the face.
Yes, it's,
I think it's disrespectful.
Yeah.
I think it's, dare I say, heretical.
That was Jerry Stahl, an interview I did with him at his Los Angeles home. His books, I, Fatty, Plain Clothes, Naked, Perv, A Love Story, Permanent Midnight, all available. And he, now you know. Now you know who wrote King Baby, Changes, and the Fur and Loathing episodes of CSI. Now, it's interesting, Riley, as we head into the second hour of our show, as we approach Delay Gate and get ready to celebrate in the fall of Tom Delay. What a great thing that is. What a great feeling that will be to see that, you know, arrogant little man go down. But here's what's interesting, is that Europe, okay, in light of what Jerry was talking about, in light of the Brent Bozell and the likes, the Parents Television Crusade, or, you know, and all these other ones, Dobson, the lot of them, trying to restrict, as Stenzenbrenner, trying to restrict our sort of, you know, ability to choose what we want in this world in terms of what we want to watch, what we want to do, where we want to go, who we want to be with, is that Europe, much more liberated sexually than America is. You have boobs on television. You know, there's boobs everywhere in Europe, literally. They're raining out of the sky. And that, you know, the American right may claim that such relaxed attitudes lead to higher pregnancy, abortion, sexual assault, and divorce rates, but I got to be honest, and we got numbers to prove it here, America tops the list in every single one of those categories, Riley.
That's right, and we're going to, after we come back from the break, detail exactly what we're talking about here, because any of you who have ever been to Europe, and many of you listen to us in Europe, you know that it's a very different environment media-wise, and you know, the ills that these folks say will befall us here don't happen in Europe.
That's right, because they're rational.
Yeah, normal.
Yeah.
Thinking.
More
human beings.
More secular.
And we'll do some more thinking when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good news.
Good morning. It's 6 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
The show you're listening to is Morning Sedition. That's with an S. Sedition. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor? If you want to support the campaign to oust Tom Delay, go to ourfuture.org to contribute. Let's make that happen. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. Right now, we are getting into the fact. The polls show that even though Europe, sexually a little bit you know, more permissive in advertising, certainly in ideology and in philosophy, certainly their culture is you know, seemingly more secular than ours. And it turns out that, you know, whatever the right is assuming is true about permissive atmospheres, that we still top the charts in terms of abortion, sexual assault, divorce rates, pregnancy rates. It's mind-blowing, Riley.
It is mind-blowing, and here's the interesting thing. Let's look for a moment at teen pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
These are teenagers 15 to 19. In the Netherlands, 8.7 pregnancies per 1,000 teenagers. France, 10 per 1,000. Germany, 16.1 per 1,000. The United States, 43 for each 1,000 teenagers. Now, what's interesting about this is that these numbers have been dropping in the States over the last 10 years, and it has nothing to do with the abstinence-only programs that the Bush administration has seen fit to fund. So even though these numbers are higher than in Europe, the fact is they've been going down, and this whole religious right nonsense that, you know, these kinds of things are causative. In other words, you know, too much sexuality in the body politic, in the world, too much exposure for teenagers leads to all this. The fact is that abstinence only is just recently coming into play, and these numbers have been dropping for the last few years.
Well, you know, after a certain point, terror tactics don't work. What works are, you know, giving people a fact-based education, a rational sort of plan of action if something happens, if something goes wrong with pregnancy or making choices about having sex. If you tell, you know, teenagers the truth, and make them, you know, feel, you know, like they're empowered and more responsible and well-informed and not frightened or feel like they're doing something wrong, that, you know, they will eventually, you know, make the right choices for themselves. If you terrify them and say, look, you know, you can get genital warts from, you know, touching something that, you know, a woman has touched, or you can get AIDS from kissing, or if you use scare tactics like that, they're going to do it just to spite you.
You know, Mark, what's amazing to me is I'm sure there are people who are listening to us right now saying, there's no place in America where they do that kind of thing. These aren't the kinds of things that they're promoting in these abstinence-only curriculums.
Yes,
but the fact is, they are!
They're in the brochures that are, you know, supported and put out by the government and religious groups that are affiliated with this government. The Christo-fascist zombie brigades who are, you know, there's going to be, you know, the Civil War in the legislature. We're going to talk about that later, Riley. Some of these other numbers are very interesting. Abortion rates for teenagers, 15 to 19. Germany, 3.6 abortions per 1,000 teenagers. Netherlands, 4.2 per 1,000. France, 10.2 per 1,000. United States, 25 abortions per 1,000 teenagers. You know, that's because scare tactics don't work. The only thing that works is education and support and, you know, not shame-based teaching or religious-based teaching.
Leading by example. Mark, this is the one thing that Americans seem totally unable to grasp. The idea that, you know, if you're out drinking and going to the club and you got a child, are you surprised in some way if the child doesn't grow up to think that drinking and going out to the club is the norm of behavior for adulthood? It is a very simple equation. If people want to stop this sort of, if people figure, well, I don't want indecency, I don't want my kid to see indecency, then you don't watch it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're prepared to make a sacrifice for your child, to say, I'm not going to watch anything that is not appropriate for my child to see, and you know, that's an individual choice. But the fact of the matter is, children follow not just what parents say, but what parents do. I remember as a kid watching my mother smoke. My mother was a two-pack-a-day cigarette smoker.
Yeah.
Okay? I didn't start smoking because my mother smoked, but I certainly didn't think there was any problem with it.
Yeah.
You know, I got away with it for 3 years before she finally caught me and beat my behind for it, but that's a whole separate discussion. The bottom line is, I followed the example. My mother always told me it was bad to smoke.
It's interesting. Bad to smoke. Can you give me my lighter, baby?
Yeah, exactly. Matches. You're the only one in here with matches? I mean, you know, and you could see that desperation. You know,
yeah.
I'm about to run out. We weren't rich. You know, my mother used to have to go to the store to get cigarettes. It's like, well, why is she shaking? Why is she up? Why is she yelling at me?
Exactly. I bought my mother cigarettes, too. It's an interesting thing, because a lot of kids who grew up with smokers in the house, they don't smoke at all. And they never smoke because it just had that kind of impact. But I smoked as well. You're right, though. And but there is a hypocrisy to, you know, it's weird. I wonder what effect that has on a kid when their parent is sitting there smoking, saying, you don't ever do
this.
Don't
do this. Yeah.
You know.
It's like Charlie Parker telling young saxophone players don't shoot heroin.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's shooting. He's the greatest saxophone player. So everybody thinks they got to shoot up in order to play.
Yeah. Don't shoot heroin. Now sit down and let me teach you a lesson.
Excuse me while I tie this. I'm sorry. That's a terrible thing.
Play the best saxophone in the world. Well, just remember that it's important to learn how to play sax before you do the heroin to become a genius. You can't do the heroin and then try to learn how to play sax. It's not going to work that way. Here's some other numbers that that I find encouraging. In a survey, most Americans disapprove of the efforts by President Bush and Congress to draw federal courts into the dispute over the treatment of the brain-dead Terry Schiavo. This is like by 55% to 40% respondents say Republicans, traditionally the party of limited government, are trying to use the federal government to interfere with the private lives of most Americans on moral values. This is good news. People are starting to wake up to the hypocrisy of the Republican Party. This is an administration, factions of the administration, that literally climbed into bed with a brain-dead woman on her death watch and exploited her. These people are you know, political rapists. And now you have many of them, the other contingent, who are also pandering to the Christo-fascist zombie brigades like Tom DeLay and the ilk of him, who are supposed to be at this Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration confronting the judicial war on faith. It's a conference that's supposed to be held April 7th and 8th in Washington, D.C., that Tom DeLay has just canceled his headlining gig to run away to the Pope's funeral, where I think he'll be getting a talking to by George Bush. Here's some other interesting poll numbers. 53 to 40%, they say Democrats who sharply expanded government since the Depression are not trying to interfere on moral issues. Good news for us. Here's an interesting poll for our Morning Sedition poll. We have a very sophisticated polling system. We sent our agents into the field to get some opinions, you know, from regular people. Here's what we found out. Question one, without offering a clear explanation of why we were asking, we asked 512 people to choose simply God or country. 70 said God, 62 said country, 13 asked, you mean like Merle Haggard country or Shania Twain country? 212 people said, I'm happy with my internet provider and scurried away. Then we asked the follow-up, oh, really? And then the numbers changed to 180 said God, 95 said country. Only one said, yes, really, but then he asked, why? Then we said, we asked the questions here, tough guy. And then he said, what are you going to do? Do something about it, are you? And then after a while, we both backed down, and now everything's cool. Then we decided to make it a little trickier. We asked, which text is more important in your life? The Bible, the Constitution, or the Da Vinci Code. 240 said the Bible, 175 said the Constitution, 15 thought the Bible was the Constitution. 35 said the Da Vinci Code, and six asked if it's true that Tom Hanks will be in the movie. Then someone started bugging us about our internet provider. You know, can't we just do some simple polling in the park without being harassed by these people? Seriously. All right, so now when we come back, we begin the assault on Tom DeLay. There are new accusations, new indications, new celebrations in the fall of the majority leader in the House. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
The show is Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. The time has come. The bug-killing dwarf king and the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack is going to be drawn and quartered in front of us all. I hope he will be, you know, at the very least, taken out of his position, and even more so than that, chewed up and spat out by the government of the United States like Newt Gingrich was years ago. There are new accusations, Riley. Let's just make sure that everyone's up to speed. I think most people are. First of all, Tom DeLay is a congressman from Texas.
Been there since 84.
He is the House Majority Leader, and he has, you know, been accused by, you know, many different factions, not the least of the House Ethics Committee, of offering political favor in exchange for a vote, soliciting campaign contributions in return for legislative favors, improperly involving a federal agency in a Texas partisan matter, illegally funneling corporate funds to assist state political campaigns, using a charity for children as a personal political fund, taking three separate trips costing over $200,000 total, paid for by lobbyists who wanted to influence legislation, using his political action and campaign committees to funnel over $500,000 to his wife and daughter, which is a new leak. Not a leak, it's a story we just got today, supposedly for their work on his campaign.
Yeah,
and
right.
After he was admonished three times in unanimous votes bipartisan ethics committee, DeLay used his power to replace a Republican chair and two other Republican members of the committee, inserting close allies, two of whom donated to DeLay's legal defense fund. He also had the rules of the committee changed to try to ensure that he would not be admonished again. And then, after all is said and done, he climbs into bed, metaphorically speaking, with Terry Schiavo and the religious right to obfuscate, smokescreen the fact that he's a corrupt cronyism bastard. You know, and not only that, he represents traitors who want to usurp the judiciary branch of this government. Now, Riley, tell me what's going on today.
Well, first, and you pointed this out a bit earlier, two newspapers, the two most arguably influential newspapers in America, New York Times and the Washington Post, two different stories about Tom DeLay and allegations of, at the very least, cronyism, nepotism, and malfeasance.
Yes.
All right. Now, let's start with the New York Times. Tom DeLay's wife and Tom DeLay's daughter, Christine A. DeLay and Danny DeLay Farrow, respectively, paid $500,000 since 2001 for what? On the one hand, event planning in the case of his daughter. On the other hand, long-term strategic guidance and help with personnel decisions.
What the hell does that mean?
Fire the cook. What's that mean? I don't know what it means.
What it means is, could you put this in your account?
Yeah, yeah. Here's the I got $500,000 coming. I can't show it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
please,
I'm
just
sure.
Put this in the don't put it in the joint either. Put it in your account.
In your account. Now, I'm sure most Americans would love to be able to hire their wives and children to work for them, or better yet, to hire their wives and children and have someone else pay for them. Okay, because that's essentially what DeLay did.
Yeah.
He has his little arm pack. Is that what it? Americans for a Republican Majority. That's DeLay's national pack. Okay,
yeah,
that's the arm that paid his wife and daughter.
Okay,
now
yeah.
He controls the arm that paid yeah. his wife and daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's be clear what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
This is a guy who, as you point out, would pimp a dying woman for his own political gain. This is a man who will sit there and lecture and presume to lecture the rest of us
yeah.
about morality.
Yeah.
This is a man who came to Washington, D.C. under the rubric of changing the way the government does its business. And what has he done? He has done his business the same way a third-rate local politician in any city in America does its business, and that is hire your relatives for essentially low-show and no-show jobs. Now, I say low-show and no-show because they didn't, in the disclosure forms that you're required to fill out, describe the work that Christine DeLay did and Danny DeLay Farrow did as, you know, long-term strategic guidance or event planning.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what they said. You know what they said? Fundraising fees, campaign management, or payroll.
Right.
Now, this is how Tom DeLay describes the alleged work that his wife and daughter did. We know it's nonsense. We know it's... And what has he got? What has he come... Well, Nancy Pelosi paid somebody $15,000.
That's all they got. That's all they got. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Listen to those numbers, Riley. That's a good point. Nancy bought like 15 G's for Barbara Boxer, it was.
I'm sorry, Barbara Boxer, yes.
A California Democrat directed $15,000 from a political action committee in 2003 to a consulting firm run by her son. And Howard L. Berman of California, the ranking Democrat on the House Ethics Committee from 1997 to 2003, paid $50,000 from his campaign accounts last year to a consulting firm owned by his brother. So total, that's $65,000. We're talking on DeLay's watch, you know, with his wife and his daughter, is it
$500,000?
And that's all they got on the Democrats? This is beautiful. And DeLay, a couple weeks ago, a spokesman for DeLay, I guess it was last week, said this is an organized political assault against Tom DeLay on behalf of the Democrats. God, I hope so. You know what I mean? And the thing is that even if it's not, you know, whoever had, you know, the presence of mind, and I don't know if it was presence of mind, but whether they're taking action or not, whatever the Democratic Party is doing, whatever's going on, they don't need to do much because these
idiots are starting to show themselves for the greedy, corrupt bastards that they are, willing to exploit, you know, anybody to get what they want.
Now, we've also got the other shoe that has yet to drop, and that's about a 1997 trip to Moscow. But imagine this, folks. You've all seen those kind of old-time movies where people are walking in a crowd and there's a safe that's hanging by a slender thread over the head of
yeah.
you, and everybody else scatters out of the way, and one dummy stands there and gets the safe dropped on his head. The dummy is Tom DeLay in this case.
When was the last time you went to the movies?
Hey, 19... I watched Turner Classic movies.
Okay.
All right, this is a Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy action. And that's what's happening to Tom DeLay.
It's good.
Bill Frist has already peeled himself off on the judges thing. You watch how these politicians, little by little, start putting a little bit of distance between themselves and the House Majority Leader to the point that he's going to stand there and look around for his friends, and all he's going to have is James Dobson, Tony Perkins, and a bunch of other geeks who can't do anything for him.
So let me get this straight. The real political action being taken is by Republicans. Members of his own party are starting to take a political action and move away from the stink of Tom DeLay.
That's right. It's called an odor. The Wall Street Journal called it an odor.
Yes.
We'll call it some other things when we come back, because we got more on Tom DeLay here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Gentlemen.
Yow! What was that noise? 34 past the hour, Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yow!
Yeah, good, thank you. I feel better now we both did. I'm not alone.
There you go.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I go to therapy tomorrow. Tomorrow, right? What day is today? Wednesday.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Wednesday. I woke up too early today. I woke up earlier than I usually do. I went running yesterday, and I was starving.
It's disgusting, man. The more you work out, the more you eat. It's terrible.
I got to stop. Look at me.
Is that just you? I did the same thing.
You did the same thing?
I worked out, and I ate like a pig for 2 days.
It feels good. I love to eat.
Well, you know what it is? You feel like, hey, man, I
deserve it.
Press this. Let's have dinner.
I'm going to get huge. So here's my dream from last night. Here we go. So I'm hanging out at my house in Queens when the doorbell rings. I open the door and there's an entire college of cardinals in their red outfits and altar boys with candles and crucifixes and thousands of weeping old women in black work and working their prayer beads and choirs of angels singing praises unto the heavens. One somber old cardinal with glasses says, Mark Maron. I say, yeah, what do you guys want? You can't all use my bathroom, sorry. He says, the College of Cardinals has convened at the Vatican and has elected you the new Pope. Christ's representative on earth. Get your coat. The Pope Mobile is waiting. Whoa, wait a minute. I'm not Catholic. I'm Jewish. In fact, I don't really even believe anything religious except maybe food. The cardinal says, we did some market research, talked to some consultants, and decided to go in a different direction this time. We crunched the numbers, and you're the guy. You are a Mark Maron type. And we've got an option on Sam Cedar. I look down at the jeans and sweater I'm wearing and say, I can't be Pope in this. What about the robes and the pointy hat and all that? The cardinal shakes his head and says, new rules, Mark. We're positioning you as the casual Pope, the cool Pope, the edgy Pope. You can wear whatever hats you like, turn the brim sideways if you want. You're infallible. This is starting to sound pretty good. I say, what about my cats? Can I bring them? The cardinal says, there are 2,000 rooms in the Vatican. You can bring a million cats if you want. Bring an elephant. Bring a whale. Whatever. You're the freaking Pope. Sweet. So some time passes, and I'm on a balcony overlooking an enormous crowd of the faithful in St. Peter's Square. The cheering is deafening. I step up to the microphone. The crowd grows deathly quiet. I pause a second and say, So what do you guys want to do? I woke up and my bed was filled with white smoke.
Uh-oh.
So onward into DeLay, the right wing, this is beautiful, Riley, because, you know, it's coming from both sides. You know what I mean? And, you know, there's a lot of things happening today that are very exciting.
Yes.
You know, like, here's a quote from the Wall Street Journal. In Beltway speak, what this means is that Mr. DeLay has an odor. Nothing too incriminating, nothing actually criminal, just an unsavory whiff that could have GOP loyalists reaching for the political glade if it gets any worse. And they're doing it, Riley.
Yes, they are doing
for the glade.
Well, here's the second, nail in the coffin, I guess.
Okay.
Well, we've already put about five. Maybe this is about the sixth.
You need to seal it up good.
Front page of the Washington Post in 1997. Tom DeLay, who was then House Majority Whip, went on a six-day trip to Moscow. He said the trip was sponsored by a Washington-based nonprofit organization, the same nonprofit that allegedly financed his trip to London some years later. As it turns out, however, the Washington Post says this trip was underwritten by business interests lobbying in support of the Russian government. This is according to the Washington Post, according to four people with firsthand knowledge of the trip arrangements. Not only that, and this is the real capper here, this company that allegedly paid for DeLay's trip is a bit of a mystery. They're registered in the Bahamas. When the Washington Post tried to find out exactly what was going on with them, it turns out that they kind of like disappeared into a puff of smoke or something.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very, very strange situation here.
So they have an offshore tax dodge account in the Bahamas from somewhere, and then, you know, they investigated it, and poof, they disappeared.
Poof,
wow.
It doesn't appear as though, I mean, look, here's a quote from the Washington Post article.
Sorry.
And they're talking about this organization, it's called Chelsea Commercial Enterprises LTD.
Uh-huh.
They're the ones that the Post says funded this lobbying campaign to the tune of $440,000 and funded this all-expense-paid trip by Tom DeLay and four of his staff members to the tune of $57,238.
Now, this
is the best part. This is
good.
The payoff. A regular office for the firm could not be located by the Post in Moscow or at its two listed addresses. Its Bahamian registration ended in 2000, officials there said. Efforts by the Post to find the three men, one Belgian, one British, one Russian, named in lobbying registrations as Chelsea investors or owners, were unsuccessful.
Shady. Shady.
Puff of smoke.
Shady. Boy, that odor's getting thick.
Yeah,
What is that stink in here?
Smells like meat.
It smells like DeLay. So, this is interesting, too, because, DeLay was supposed to speak at this conference. Now, we've been talking about this conference, all right? This is the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration. The conference is called Confronting the Judicial War on Faith. This is an activist organization full of traitors, people who are anti-American, anti-constitutional, and want to usurp or overthrow the judiciary branch of this government, of our government, which is the only one that's actually defending what little bit of democracy we have left.
Yeah.
Now, Tom DeLay was supposed to headline this event. He was the big closer. So after these allegations about his wife and daughter being paid $500,000 over the last few years for services that apparently they shouldn't have been paid for, because how could they have missed that this lobbying group paid DeLay to go on this trip, paid for the trip. But in light of that, in light of these other accusations that are coming to light, Tom DeLay abruptly decided he was going to the Pope's funeral. Now, obviously, his aligning himself and literally him and a few other of these anti-American, anti-constitutional traitors, tried to politically get into bed with Terry Schiavo, and that sort of backfired. And these people are starting to be marginalized by the Republicans. Let's explore what the JC, the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration, is and who those people are. I mean, the executive committee has Jerry Falwell on it.
Yes.
It has Frank Pavone, the Catholic priest, who became very visible during the Terry Schiavo ordeal. It has Ray Flynn, who describes himself. He's a former Vatican ambassador appointed by Clinton. He also describes himself as pro-life, pro-family, and pro-poor.
Yeah.
Ray Flynn's all for the poor. But it's very interesting that this group of people, is part of a momentum. A momentum right now that is really, actively trying to inspire people to take action, even violent action, against the judiciary branch of our government.
Now, consider for a moment the interim director of the JCCCR, one Rick Scarborough, who's also president of Vision America. Vision America's mission? To promote biblical values back into every aspect of the public arena. He authored a book called Enough is Enough. It was published by Liberty Press, and of course, who owns Liberty Press, none other than Jerry Falwell.
There you go.
It is a, quote, work dedicated to promoting theocracy over traditional church-state views. This is according to a review by a Texas Baptist committed.
Shamelessly promoting theocracy. They want to shove a Jesus tube down all our throats.
Yes, they do, and they want the American body politic to reflect their religious views.
Which, as we know, is in complete violation of the separation of church and state. And this is a real issue. I've been criticized for criticizing Christians. I don't want to limp all Christians. I don't want to lump all Christians together. I mean, you know, I know that some Christian beliefs are progressive beliefs, that some of the rules ideas of humanity in the New Testament are very decent liberal rules that, you know, actually some of them predated Christianity. But, you know, nonetheless, I can understand all that. But this is clearly a political and theocratic movement. This is the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigades. Tom DeLay is one of their champions. And when we come back after this break, we will sort of lay out a sound montage, in a way, of Senator Cornyn from Texas, Frank Pavone, the priest who, was at the Schiavo case, reinvent the Catholic Church here in this country. DeLay, we'll have a little sound from him, and Randall Terry, of course, from Operation Rescue. And, you know, putting those all together, you will certainly hear that there is a message of anti-Americanism. There's a message of anti-constitutionalism. There is a message, you know, not so even, you know, hidden, that says, you know, do whatever you have to do to, you know, to hurt the judiciary branch of this country, which, because of their, you know, they are appointed and not elected, is the only one that is protecting democracy from these horrendous religious fanatics who want to take it over, who want to overthrow part of the U.S. government. These are traitors, people. We'll hear from them when we come back. It's 44 past the hour.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil.
In 3 hours or less,
Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
The show is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. Thank you. Thank you for doing that, for listening to Air America Radio. I'm trying to adjust my headset because I have to wear a headset to hear myself talk. Here I am. Okay, there I am in my head. So now we're talking about Tom DeLay, and we're talking about the organized assault, and even, you know, instigating violence on behalf of this group of traitors, you know, being led by Tom DeLay and Representative or Senator Cornyn from Texas. It's interesting, two Texans, you know, trying to overthrow the government. Texans have a certain, some of them, I'm not going to generalize, some of them have a certain arrogance about, you know, Texas in and of itself is almost its own country. But let's hear a series of sound, pieces of sound, that I think pretty strongly indicate that they are trying to initiate even a violent overthrow of the judiciary branch. And this is supported by Senator Cornyn of Texas. It's supported by Congress Representative Tom DeLay, who is on his way out as House Majority Leader. Maybe you can, you know, maybe put more time into his anti-American agenda. Yeah. So let's start with Senator Cornyn. This is from 2 days ago. This is about, I think, will you hear it? We'll hear it first.
And finally, I don't know if there is a cause and effect connection, but we have seen some recent episodes of courthouse violence in this country. Certainly nothing new, but we seem to have run through a spate of courthouse violence recently that's been on the news. And I wonder whether there may be some connection between the perception in some quarters on some occasions where judges are making political decisions yet are unaccountable to the public, that it builds up and builds up and builds up to the point where some people engage in violence.
You see, the reason that's a suggestion and not an observation based on anything but, you know, him spinning it to suggest that maybe people should do that is because those two incidents
violence against judges had nothing to do with ideological issues. Zero. They were both, you know, bitter, angry people that lashed out in violence because of the sentences that were doled out to them or not doled out to them by specific judges on individual matters that had nothing to do with politics. So that makes that that's an insinuation, and he is suggesting that people, you know, are doing that or that people should do that. Now, this is, you know, heinous, treasonous behavior on behalf of a senator in the United States Senate. Am I wrong?
No, look, he's a former judge. He's a former justice of the Texas Supreme Court coming up with this. Apparently, he's never been a target of anyone's. And to bring up several situations that have nothing to do with judicial activism, have everything to do with individual court decisions that were made by those judges. You know, people's families were killed. Two family members in the case of the woman, the judge in Chicago. The judge was sitting on the bench in Atlanta, Georgia, shot and killed.
Oh.
And you would disgrace their legacy by trying to link them to some form of judicial activism?
By politicizing it. These guys have no shame. They'll politicize anything. They politicized a brain-dead woman on her deathbed. They literally climbed into bed with her politically and abused her, exploited her, you know, politically raped her, and now they're, you know, dancing on the graves of a judge to politicize that. Shameless. These guys are shameless. It's a crime. You know, these guys are traitors. You know, and talk about political activism. How could they dare accuse liberals of political activism when they're trying to enforce their own judicial activism by insinuating or suggesting that people actually act violently against members of the judiciary?
Well, you know, tomorrow there's going to be this JCCR conference that begins in Washington. Tom DeLay was supposed to be there. He's now decided to cut out, go over to Rome for the Pope's funeral.
Maybe he's going to confess.
It would be a good thing.
At the side of the dead Pope. These guys are really great at talking for dead people.
I'm thinking he's probably over there trying to cop a plea with George W. Bush. I'm thinking, you know, they're out of town, they can sit down, they can talk somewhere, you know, nice coffee shop
too.
On the streets
too.
Of Rome or something.
Yeah,
and
right.
Say, hey, look, this is my situation. What am I going to do here?
How about talking in a nice coffee shop in Rome? How about on Air Force One with George Bush going, quit crying. Quit crying.
Be a man.
You brought it on yourself.
Well, here's Tom DeLay. Let's play a snippet of Tom DeLay, Chris, if we could, talking about Terri Schiavo's death. And again, making these very thinly veiled threats against the judiciary. Chris, can we go to that sound?
Number three.
We will look at an arrogant, out-of-control, unaccountable judiciary that thumb their nose at Congress and the president.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, and then let's hear in the same vein, let's hear, you know, Frank Pavone, Reverend Frank Pavone, who has now, you know, started the anti-abortion group Priests for Life, is speaking outside the, you know, the hospice after Terri Schiavo's death. And this is a guy that's part of the new kind of, you know, retooling of the American Catholic Church, is that, you know, they sort of, you know, crapped the bed, you know, when it came because of, you know, there were literally hundreds of priests molesting, you know, little boys. So now, like, they figured they got a good in with a woman who can't speak for herself. Here's Pavone suggesting, you know, ethical retribution for anybody who goes against this judiciary.
This is not only a death with all the sadness that brings, this is a killing. And for that, we not only grieve that Terri has passed, but we grieve that our nation has allowed such an atrocity as this, and we pray that it will never happen again.
See, I meant that he's sort of insinuating now or suggesting that people, you know, be ethical in terms of old Bible ethics, and, you know, let's get some payback.
Well, yeah, and remember that these folks are trying to assign very specific responsibility for Terri Schiavo's death, whether it be an out-of-control judiciary or whether it be Michael Schiavo, who has himself been the subject of a number of death threats ever since this story rose to national prominence. They are targeting on the one hand, the judiciary, because they know that short of actually going out and impeaching them, an idea that Tom DeLay came up with, but nobody else seems to be on board with, that they can't do anything about the judiciary.
That's great. Now let's hear one of the classic, one of the old-timers of of the Christian right. Again, suggesting that action be taken. Number four, Randall Terry.
But I promise you, if she dies, there is going to be hell to pay with the pro-life, pro-family Republican people of various legislative levels, statewide and federal-wide.
What type of, that sounds like a threat. What type of...
It's not a threat. No, we're going to deal with it later. It's not a threat.
We're going to deal with it later. That's the weird little aside. We got a plan. We got the Michigan militia suggesting, that we all, get together. And yet, I don't know, man, but I'll tell you one thing. These guys are, anti-American, anti-constitution. These guys are a group of traitors that want to overthrow the U.S. government and install a theocracy. And it's never been clearer from where I'm sitting, Riley.
Absolutely. And it's about time for people that value freedom, that value the judiciary and the role it plays in our society, to unite and make their political voices heard. We've heard so much from the right about all of this stuff. It's about time for others to stand up, and including Christians who are not on board with this, theocracy-leaning group of people that call themselves Christians. It's time to stand up.
Let's talk about the Patriot Act when we come back, because that's taken some hits. Good.
Yeah.
Montana is a good story out of Montana, stifling it. It's good.
It is good. And we're going to talk about it when we come back. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Look, folks, if you want to support the campaign to oust Tom DeLay, go to ourfuture.org to contribute. Let's get on board with this. And by the way, Morning Sedition has been nominated for 3 March of Dimes Achievement in Radio Awards. One for a best news interview with our interview with the USMC Staff Sergeant Jim Massey. Best entertainment interview for our interview with Will Ferrell, and best parody or song, which was the Survivor of the Bush Cabinet, and that's up against Somebody Farted, which is going to be, it's going to be tough. It's, because Somebody Farted is very well produced. It's, I think we'll play it later in the hour, so look forward to that. We'll play our Survivor, the Bush Cabinet, and and what we'll probably lose to, Somebody Farted. But it's important, satire has, it's a broad, it's a big umbrella. Somebody Farted equally as important as, taking on the Bush Cabinet through song. So, anyway, so speaking of song, I get a call. I call my mother. She's not home. I get Jazz Guy. I get my mother's boyfriend, John, who I haven't talked to in a long time. Boy, he was doing it, man. Skilly bop doo bop, yeah. He was like, he's like, man, you really turn it out in the morning. Boy, you're talking a mile a minute. Boy, you're quick. You're quick. And I'm like, I'm sure you could do it. No. And I could get a word in edgewise for about 20 minutes. And you know what he says? He says, your mom really digs it, man. She's goofing on you every morning. When was the last time you heard that? Goofing on. Where does that come from?
Upper West Side of Manhattan.
It's a dope fiend, though. Isn't it a dope phrase, goofing, or no?
Not necessarily.
It was just funny to hear.
Yeah, he said gimmicks.
Yeah.
Then
okay.
That would be a dope reference.
I gotta get my jazz phraseology book to figure out what he's saying sometimes. And then we start talking about Sam Kenton.
Really?
Yeah, he's a big swing cat, man.
Oh, okay. Kenton, Glenn Miller.
Yeah. And I always start talking like that. It's like, yeah, dig it, man. And then he asked me if we're ever going to have Mousy Lawrence on the show.
Who? Mousy?
Yeah, he was he's a Catskills guy, really.
Oh, okay.
A wackadoo, as Jazz Guy would say. Yeah, that guy's crazy, man. He's a real wackadoo from the old days.
Uh-oh.
So let's...
Look, you want to talk about some wackadoo?
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about Alberto Gonzalez.
What's up with that?
About the FBI director.
And Mueller. Robert Mueller are trying to... they're fighting for their baby.
Yes.
They're fighting for their baby, the Patriot Act. And apparently, what is it? Isn't there? There's a couple of senators, Larry Craig and Dick Durbin, are going to try to introduce some bill that'll stop it, right? That'll amend the Patriot Act.
Bipartisan support for amending the Patriot Act. Why? because there are 16 provisions in the law are set to expire by the end of the year, and they're trying to decide which ones they're going to deal with and which ones they aren't. Two of them that are of particular importance.
Mm-hmm.
One, Section 213 of the Patriot Act. That's the sneak and peek one. That's the one that says, while Mark Maron is on the air, the government can go to his house in Astoria, search it, and never tell you.
Oh, hold on. Make sure the cats are okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
By the way, you might, if they poop, clean it up,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, because you check the box. There might be something in the litter box. If you just throw the poop that's in there away, it'll be easier for you to go through.
Yeah, so thanks for coming by.
You know what I started thinking about right when you started talking about this yesterday, about this particular part of the Patriot Act? It's like, you know, I want to believe that I have a really good lock on my door. You know, because if they can...
piece of cake for a bunch of intrusive spies.
But aren't they supposed to leave it as they found it, or it doesn't matter?
Under the Patriot Act?
Yeah.
Surely you jest.
No,
they're going to pop the lock. They're going to go in. They probably will want to leave it pretty much the way they found it, so you won't know they were there.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, you know, what am I going to say? Come on. I just got stuck in a groove there.
You know what will happen? If the lock is popped or something, you'll think it's a burglar.
Well, no, but I mean, I was under the impression that this was specifically, they do this so you don't know that they're there, so they don't cause any alarm, so that, you know, you get home and everything's just as it was, so you don't run or split or go out and shoot somebody. That the real reason it's put into place as it is they do it, you know, on the sly, so not to interrupt your life or make you freak out.
Yeah, now, one person, and maybe some people in our listening audience may have forgotten the name, Brandon Mayfield.
Mm.
He was the guy that they arrested and charged with being involved in the Madrid train bombing.
Right.
Okay, killed 191 people. Turned out they had the fingerprints wrong. He was totally innocent. Well, you know what? They went to his house and did this and never told him.
So now what kind of progress is being made, Riley? I mean, I know that in Montana they did a unique thing. That
yeah.
The Montana legislature passed a bill of what is it called?
A resolution.
A resolution saying that the Patriot Act is bad. We find it intrusive. We don't think the federal government should have that kind of power. And they are encouraging law enforcement officials within the state not to necessarily work with the federal government if they start to do this kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, these are not radicals we're talking about. Montana doesn't have any radicals, quite frankly. These are our folks who have a concern about basic American freedoms. And what do Mueller and Gonzalez do? They go up on the hill and they do the typical stupid thing. Oh, no, we're never going to do this against innocent people. Oh, no, we're not going to, use Section 215 of the law. This is the library provision because it allows government to demand library records in intelligence investigations.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does anyone go to the library anymore?
Well, if they do, Alberto Gonzalez wants to know.
I mean, maybe I should spend more time at the library because libraries are great, fun places, but I generally, it's weird, I'll try to borrow a book from a friend, or I'll try to get the information online. I got to go to the library.
It's not just about the library.
Mm-hmm.
Check this.
Mm-hmm.
In 35 different instances since 2003, the Justice Department used the law to gain access to information on apartment leasing, driver's licenses, financial records, and other data in intelligence investigations. And Gonzalez is telling the Hill, we've got to have this. This is an important tool in the fight against terrorism. And no, we'd never use it in a way that would be violative. Is that such a word?
Violating or
violative?
Yeah, I like it. I like the word. And I'm all for
people's, you know, civil rights.
I'm all for making up words, Riley.
Yeah. The government, well, authenticity is my best.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means the most awesome.
Okay.
But I mean, what you have here is typical of the way the intelligence community and the Justice Department functions. No, we're never going to do anything that violates it, even as there's evidence that they have used these laws improperly. They have used these provisions. And again, you know, they're talking about certain specific provisions of the Patriot Act that people find do violate folks' rights.
Now, these are supposed to run out, right? They're in January or at the end of this year?
At the end of this year, these 15. Most of the Patriot Act is permanent.
Okay.
All right. 15 of the provisions of the Patriot Act are due to run out.
And
it is these 15 that Gonzalez and Mueller are going to the Capitol Hill and saying, we still have to have these.
Well, you know, I don't know what the hell, you know, I mean, why are they so concerned with looking under our beds when they could be looking in like a few thousand caves where Bin Laden might be? What happened to the real search for terrorism internationally? Why don't we hear anything about that? And I guess the real fear, Riley, is that, you know, if you got nothing to hide, on some level you shouldn't care about this, but the truth of the matter is they shouldn't be able to do this because of all the technological stuff that we do, all the interactions we make online, offline, libraries, credit cards, everything else. If they want to put together something, if they want to get a rap sheet on you somehow, you know what I mean? They will find something to drag you in, whether it has anything to do with anything. It doesn't make any difference. It's violating your privacy, and the truth is, I think that the scary thing is they can use it for anything. They can make your life come screeching to a halt.
And
make you a suspect, you know, and embarrass you in front of your neighbors and your friends on the paper for nothing, like this guy Mayfield.
Absolutely. And, you know, this was an instance of total incompetence. They did not have the right fingerprints. Now, again, you're talking about a government agency that messed up. They have no provision in their mindset to deal with the government messing up. Gonzalez, well, what is he going to say about Brandon Mayfield? Well, it was the wrong fingerprint. But we did it with the best of intentions. Ruined someone's life with the best of intentions.
Yeah, it's horrible. And it should be stifled. It should be amended. It's 15 past the hour. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about, I'd like to talk a little bit about, the sort of schism among Republicans in the Senate. Okay, we'll be back in a second. It's Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition,
the highest rated, most respected news show in America,
on Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
The show is Morning's Edition. It's Wednesday. Look, folks, if you want to support the campaign to oust Tom DeLay, go to ourfuture.org to contribute. This is a good one. This is a good one to contribute to. It would be such a joy, such a satisfying bit of business if he was ousted as majority leader. Here we go. Let's talk about this, Riley. First of all, tell me about what happened in Kansas, sadly.
Sadly enough, Kansas voters, by a margin of 71% to 29%, and this is with 97% of the precincts reporting, approved a constitutional amendment banning same-sex couples from marrying or, more importantly, entering into civil unions.
Okay.
Now, back in the real world of the rest of the United States, it looks like the state of Connecticut's legislature may, in fact, okay civil unions in the nutmeg state.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I was raised in Connecticut.
What's really coming around here is I'm just so glad that, you know, real Americans and that, you know, people that, you know, stand for civil rights, that stand for democracy, you know, are actually being seen and heard. You know, after the election, there was such an avalanche of retardation, religious retardation, narrow-mindedness, this idea that, you know, there are, you know, all red states, you know, it's just a fallacy. And I'm very excited that some of this stuff is coming to balance out a little bit.
And, you know, in Kansas, and we talked about this yesterday, Mark, they already had a law. They already had a law banning same-sex marriages. Now, I believe that law to be wrong, but to pass a constitutional amendment, again, this gets back to the courts, because they want to stop the courts from doing something, from attempting to change the law or interpreting the law as being less than constitutional.
Okay, let's broaden this conversation, Riley. Let's talk about the Senate, and let's talk about, because there's a lot of people, the religious right and the factions of the neocon death cult, the factions of the Republican Party that are extreme right, you know, want nothing more than to, you know, just slide their judiciary picks into seats, right?
Mm.
Now, the thing is that, you know, they've been discussing this nuclear option. You know, Bill Frist has been discussing it. There's talk about stopping the filibuster. Explain to me, you know, exactly what that is and how it works in the Senate.
Okay. The nuclear option would seek a ruling from the chair. That the Democratic filibuster of Court of Appeals, one specific Court of Appeals nominee, is unconstitutional. The majority could then vote to uphold that ruling with a 51% majority rather than a two-thirds majority in order to pass. Democrats have been able to effectively block these judicial nominations when the Republicans have failed to get that two-thirds majority that is necessary to move someone's nomination along. Frist wants to change the law essentially in midstream. They got 55 Republican votes, so obviously a statistical majority of 51 means most of these judicial nominations will sail through, even if some moderates among the Republicans oppose them.
But now the Democrats still have tactics they can use to stifle the process of legislation, yes?
Yeah, and the Democrats rightly point out that this is an extraordinary tactic that Bill Frist is trying to use. And what you're starting to see now are those little fissures that we see in the Schiavo case and some other issues that are coming up, where you think that there is a solid Republican bloc that supports something. What you're seeing now is the business community saying, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
If the Democrats decide to hold up legislation in the Senate, their legislation, the business community's priorities, also get held up. And now they're saying, wait a minute, is in fact the idea of a nuclear option worth scuttling our priorities?
So the business community, i.e., you know, corporate needs,
yes,
they don't care about these moral issues. They don't. This whole charade with the religious right was just to, in their eyes, just to, you know, guarantee that the GOP would stay in power long enough for them to get their needs met. You know, i.e., restricting victims' rights legislation, bankruptcy legislation, changing Social Security, you know, making sure that corporations are safe and can protect their bottom line. But oddly, in this particular case, the business community is saying, you know, don't do this. You know, you can't do this nuclear option because the Democrats are going to hold this up forever. So let's let it operate the way it's supposed to operate.
Well, yeah, because they've been winning. They've gotten the bankruptcy bill through. They've gotten all these other things through, and they're saying to themselves, wait a minute, we're on a roll here. Why would we now stop? Now, make no mistake, the business community does want to see more conservative judges named to the bench. Let's be clear about that. They're not crazy. But the flip side of the equation is they are doing very simple triage. Here is our interest. Here is the principle of, changing this long-held rule on filibusters. Which one do we want to go with?
This is like, it's so difficult for somebody who's sitting where I'm sitting, because I really would like to see the religious right, you know, lose this battle. I do not want them to initiate this nuclear option, but, you know, I don't want the corporate entities to get away with everything that they need to get away with. This is one of those interesting political situations, if you believe in the political process at all, because in order for us to get, you know, our needs met in terms of some fairness in the judiciary, we have to not side with, but hope that big business, you know, wins this battle.
Well, see, big business also is calculating that an overwhelming majority of Bush administration nominees to the bench have been confirmed. We're talking about a relatively small number. I think it's like out of 200 and some odd, we're talking about 10, 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying they're doing triage. Now, the social issue groups, on the other hand, the social conservatives, are saying, look, we want this filibuster done because they want these judges in place to rule on issues like obscenity, to rule on issues like indecency, to start changing the fabric of America through the same type of judicial activism that they have historically decried in, quote, liberal judges, going back to the Warren Court in the 50s.
Wow, I hate to say this, but I hope business wins out this one.
Yeah.
Because I hate to say it too. I don't want to, I don't want to convert, and I
still convert to what, Gabby?
Whatever the new law will be.
Yeah,
you know
right.
What I mean?
Wow.
We're going to come back with the war on brains, I guess.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about gas prices.
Yeah, because they're going up a penny a day. We'll talk about that when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition, don't be stupid. It feels like thinking. You know, every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the five-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Erie, Pennsylvania, a low 127 on a list of the safest cities in America, and hometown to the woman who played Alice on the Brady Bunch. You do the math. 218 B.C., the Battle of Trebia. Hannibal of Carthage defeats the Roman general Titus Sempronius, thus starting a tragic war that could have transformed the Roman Republic our democracy is supposedly based on into a barbaric tyranny where people smear their bodies with blue paint and delicious fish sauce before sacrificing children to their goat god. Now, some 9 or 10,000 years later, another barbarian is at the gates, George Bush of Crawford.
Yeah.
The Department of Homeland Security has just awarded a no-bid contract to Mercyhurst College in Erie, Pennsylvania, to train this country's intelligence personnel. Erie is the hometown of Tom Ridge, former Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. He's got friends and campaign contributors on the Board of Trustees. Get the connection? Sure you do. Did you come to the conclusion that such a connection is corrupt? Congratulations! You are now qualified to analyze intelligence.
Yay.
Now, at first glance, I suppose a tiny Roman Catholic college would seem the first choice the most powerful nation on earth would choose to train its elite intelligence units. After all, it's conveniently located on the east shore of Lake Erie. While its competitors, Georgetown and George Washington Universities, are actually located in Washington. In the brains department, Mercyhurst has 5 professors at its Institute for Intelligence Studies, while Georgetown and George Washington have what? Oh, 95? But I guess its greatest asset is its college president, Bill Garvey, who just resigned under allegations that for over 40 years he'd been using his intelligence expertise to investigate the genitals of at least 6 boys. Please note how I cleverly use sarcastic intonation to mean the opposite of what I actually said. It's all part of a little thing called artifice.
All right.
No doubt another type of artifice will be used to decorate Mercyhurst's newest building, coincidentally named after Tom Ridge and his lovely wife. No, not Tammany Hall. No, not the Tom and Michelle Ridge I'm a Whore political payoff building. No, not the insert your own funny name here with fart sound effect building. But the Tom and Michelle Ridge health and safety building. Shameful. Ignominious.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Sweet.
You'd think the first test of whether a college is qualified to train intelligence personnel would be the ability to figure out that getting a no-bid government contract is illegal. The second test would be the ability to figure out the real reason your college president has balloons and a train set in his office. Tawdry. Distasteful.
Yeah.
You really want to train intelligence experts? Don't hire Roman Catholics. Hire the Mormons. Anyone who could decipher Howard Hughes' rambling notes and keep track of all those jars of urine must know what they're doing. Yes, they do think Jesus talked to the Indians, but that's not nearly as embarrassing as Jesus appearing in a grilled cheese sandwich, now is it? I rest my case. And that's today's... And that's to... When in desperation, end on a fart. And that's today's dispatch from...
The War on Brains.
Give us another one.
Yeah. Wow, you do that pretty well.
But it's such a tight one.
I know.
You know, it's like it's so specific to the Milfington character, the tightness of the fart. Hey, you know, it's nice to see you. Thank you for coming down and sharing this stuff with us. You know, we really appreciate you coming down every week with this stuff. You know that, don't you?
Thanks, Mark. I come here every morning, Wednesday morning, to cheer myself up.
What, didn't you just turn 60? Was it? How? What is it? Wasn't your 60th birthday? Wasn't?
I was. You know, this is all part of the misinformation that is rampant here in Morning Edition.
All right.
Oh, you know what? Suck on some more coffee there, Mr. Exploiter of South American white bean pickers.
It's a lot easier when it's on the page written, isn't it? It's weird how it takes a little time to...
Sorry, I don't have 3 hours to verbally masturbate.
I'm trying to get some coffee. Get Dan Pashman, Son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, please do me a favor, man. Now that I said your name on the air, that's close to getting on the air, isn't it? So, sorry. I'm sorry. Hey,
no, he's not.
Yeah, no, I am. Mort, thank you for coming. I apologize if there's any discomfort. What is that little thing you're playing with there in the net? What is that?
It's called chocolate. It's another thing that's imported from South America.
Why are you playing with it? What, those are chocolate coins. Is that Hanukkah guilt? It's a little late.
Hanukkah? Oh, no, not me.
Right.
I'm not one of
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying. You're saying I'm a Jew and you want nothing to do with it.
Why do you hate your people?
I don't. They're okay. It's you I have a problem with.
Whatever.
All right. There he goes. Thanks for coming by, Mort. Appreciate everything. Yeah. Here we go. So that was very informative, as always.
Yeah.
Enjoy
enlightening. Yes.
So tell me about this, Riley. How much is gas? Is it, what is it, up to $9 a gallon today?
What
the hell's going on, man?
We're on the road. Right now, and the average price of a gallon of regular gas is 2.217 cents per gallon. That's up 6.4 cents from a week earlier.
I'll tell you, I'm grateful not to be in L.A. You know what I mean? As much as, I miss my house and my wife and my kitty cats and my car, it's going to be saving me some money just to have one of us driving around all day.
I'm telling you, what analysts are saying, that the average could hit $2.35 a gallon if wholesale gas continues to stay at its current level, which is about $1.70 a gallon.
A penny a day.
Yes.
When does that tap out? How high did you just say it's going to get to? What
it could. Now, this is average. It could get to $2.35. In California, where it's higher than the average, it's up to $2.464.
You know, it's interesting, you know, in California, you know, it's very hard to get around. I mean, there's a lot of public transportation, but man, you know, it takes a long time.
It comes whenever it feels like it. I've been to L.A.
Yeah, you know, and they've got some train systems, but not as thorough or as efficient as we have here in terms of getting everywhere in the city.
Well, yeah, and most people in Los Angeles seem not to know. This is a few years I've been there, but they seem not to know anything about the train system. It's like, well, can I take the train? I don't know.
I think there's only a couple of lines, actually. But with the only time I took a bus in L.A., oddly, was right after I did my first evening at the Improv in 1989. I was staying at a hotel in Santa Monica, and the Improv was down by the water, and I got on a bus to go to my first TV appearance. And then after the TV appearance, I got back on the bus, and there was a certain humility in it. I felt it was humbling. It was good. But it is going up a penny a day. This has got to be hurting people. You know, it is. I don't know why. Can we hold Bush responsible for this? Absolutely, right?
Well, we can in terms of whether
or not
we can. Yeah. I mean, he's the president. The buck stops with him.
That's right.
He could dip into the reserves, or he could use his alleged friendship with our alleged friends, the Saudis, to get, you know, not that the Saudis run OPEC or anything, but the Saudis certainly do have a lot to say about the price of gas across the world. And see, you know, in Europe, they have no sympathy for us any more than they do about our you know, sexual, I was about to say a word I can't really say, but about our sexual peccadilloes.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, in Europe, they're already paying, you know, $3.54 a gallon, the equivalent of $3.54 a gallon for gasoline. But in America, according to a USA Today CNN Gallup poll, 58% of Americans say that the price of gas is creating financial hardship.
Well, is that you? Give us a call at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. You know, also, I guess there was some Democrats who were trying to get a list of oil exporters, you know, from the Department of Commerce, I guess that would be.
That's it.
Yeah, and they're not going to give it up. I mean, it would seem that would be helpful to sort of dictate a new energy policy, but this administration is stifling them. Am I right?
Not only are they stifling them, the Bush administration energy policy has been cloaked in secrecy since the transition back in 2000.
Yeah.
Remember when Cheney called all those energy people in? And then when they tried to get the records of what they talked about, what did they say? Oh, no, you don't.
Yeah, and it might actually be because they're understaffed, apparently. Bob Novak wrote a piece that said that, you know, they're not filling basic, you know, undersecretary positions within the department because if somebody is not aligned with them, thank you, Dan, for that coffee. I really appreciate it, and I know it's not your job, and I appreciate you doing me a favor, and I will do you a favor someday, too. You know what? Come say hi to the people out there.
Come on.
Quick,
come on.
Quick.
Hi, everyone.
Dan Pashman, ladies and gentlemen. But, but what was I just talking about? See how?
The question that you mentioned that it came from the Commerce Department. This is the Commerce Department that is headed now by Carlos Kellogg Gutierrez, the new guy. And he's the one that's telling them, no, we're not giving you the information.
And he's also the guy that tried to bring one of his boys over from Kellogg's, the Kellogg Corporation, the Kellogg Company, and Bush said, at the last minute, said, the administration said, no, we can't have him because he's not completely on board because he's aligned somehow with McCain.
With McCain, yeah. The guy had bought a townhouse in D.C. and they sent him home.
Yeah, see, this happens a lot. There's a lot of understaffing going on out of fear. We're going to go now and we're going to take your calls on the other side of this, 866-303-2270. How's this gas price, how's it crunching your life? How are these prices hurting you? 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Call us at 866-303-2270. Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi, I'm busy dancing.
You were dancing. And I don't think I've seen you dance before.
I know.
That was exciting. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Let's do this. Why not do these? We're taking calls about how the penny-a-day gas price hike is affecting you and your life. But let's do a little headline translating with the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator right here in the room. Let's get into this because sometimes it's hard to understand what's really being said. From the New York Times, political groups paid two relatives of House leader. Political groups paid two relatives of House leader. Translation, Tom DeLay boasts of successful job creation program. From Fox News, Kansas voters approved gay nups ban. Kansas voters approved gay nups ban. Translation, let's see, Land of Oz slams Friends of Dorothy. From the Associated Press, yes, delivery man stuck in elevator for 80 hours, Riley. We've been talking about this for 2 days.
Yeah.
Delivery man stuck in the elevator for 80 hours. Translation, delivery man apologizes for tardiness, throws in free egg roll, or the alternative one, trapped man survives by eating own poo-poo platter. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to even do that. Why did I let them make me do that? Dan! The funny thing is, it had nothing to do with Dan, but I wanted to throw him in. And if he were responsible for it. The people that are responsible for the poo-poo platter joke will pay. You understand? They will pay Brendan P.W. McDonald. Let's see if I can make Mark say poo. All right. I guess that was, All right, here we go. Let's take some calls. Marina, listening to LIB in New Jersey, how are you?
I'm great.
Hi, so how's this affecting you, this ridiculous gas prices?
Well, I got a happy, fun weekend job to pay for, beer. And it's paying for gas. My entire paycheck every week goes to fill up my tank so I can get to my not-so-happy, fun daytime job.
So it's cutting into your beer money.
It's totally cutting into my beer and fun money.
Oh, man.
Now,
interesting
thing about this is Marina's calling us from New Jersey. New Jersey has the lowest gas prices in the country generally because the taxes are lower. So in many instances, gas prices in Jersey haven't spiked quite as high, for example, as they have in California, but it's still a problem.
Let's talk to Shari in Fort Worth, Texas. Shari.
Hi, Shari. Shane.
Shane, I'm sorry.
Shane.
I got new glasses, Shane. I'm getting old.
That's okay, aren't we all?
Yeah, what's going on? How's this affecting you?
Well, I just got offered a promotion at work, and instead of the usual 50-mile round trip, I've got to go 100 miles round trip, and I can't do that because I'd be filling up every other day.
Wow, some change has got to happen. Thanks for your call, Shane.
Wow.
You know, it's bad. It's getting, and it seems to me that it's within the control of this administration to make this better. You know, we've got to tell you about something. Thank you for your calls. We're moving on. I appreciate it. Look, you know, Radio Morning Sedition has been nominated for 3 March of Dimes Achievement and Radio Awards, all right? We're nominated for Best News Interview for our interview with Jim Massey, Sergeant Jim Massey. We're nominated for Best Entertainment Interview for our Will Ferrell interview. And we're also Best Parody or Song for Survivor of the Bush Cabinet. Now, we're up against Somebody Farted, which was a Z100 song parody. And you know what? I hope we lose against Somebody Farted. I just want to lose to Somebody Farted, and I want you to hear Somebody Farted. Can we play that, Chris?
Nobody's admitting to it. Someone's eating stupid. Someone farted. Someone farted. Someone farted. Somebody farted. Ha! Somebody farted.
Nice. Listen to that. To that production. I mean, and you know what's great is, you know, because of that production, that there was a group of like, you know, female singers back there, you know, with a real serious look on their face, just singing their butts off. You know what I mean? Just like, somebody fun, you know, and they're like, you know, with a full on kind of like, you know, with their headset on with, you know, one finger in their ear, making sure they're not out of tune. Somebody fun with no humor whatsoever. I'm a professional.
That's right.
What are you working on? Did you hear the somebody farted thing? That was me. I'm a studio musician.
That's
so
right.
Can we play our thing?
Previously on Survivor, the tribe was shaken up by the departure of John, who sang his way right off the island.
Let the evil soul.
And with his exit, Alberto became the new tribe suck-up.
Just give me a chance to prove myself.
Then, after tribal challenge, tribe leader George kept control of the coveted immunity idol and used it to cast away any tribe member who wasn't firmly in his alliance.
I earned capital, political capital, and now I intend to spend it.
Rod, Anne, Spencer, and Don fell victim to the tribal mandate.
Next.
Colin was obviously not loyal enough and had his torch extinguished. At first, he was in denial of his departure.
No, I'm not leaving, sorry, I just...
But the tribe had spoken, and Colin was dragged from the island, leaving his dignity behind.
Bring the camera back, please. Please.
9 remain. Some will stay, others will meet their pathetic end. But in the end, there will be only one survivor, and hey, we all know who that is.
It's definitely a parody, but it's certainly no somebody farted. Okay.
Hey, what? I hate to say this.
Yeah.
I like ours better.
But what do you hate? you bastard!
Huh?
How dare you like?
Well,
ours
I know
better.
We're all supposed to think that somebody farted, which is just, you know, 2 lyrics. That's all it is.
Why? Of course. but we're probably going to lose just because of the power of somebody farted.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's our liberal agenda for today. Write these down. From the Streisand compound, 1, don't hide your joy about Tom DeLay's misfortunes. An erection is a perfectly natural reaction, and to balance it out, a clitoral engorgement as well. Oh, man. Why'd I have to say it twice? 2, even though it hasn't launched yet, complain that Al Gore's new TV network isn't progressive enough. 3, the next telemarketer that calls, lecture him about Kyrgyzstan. 4, mourn the passing of Prince Rainier. Despite pressure from Bush, he refused to send a squad of croupiers to Iraq. 5, today's phrase, disrupt this in the conversation. You ever wonder what's happening during all this dead Pope stuff, man? It's not good, people. So wake up, sheeple. Did I say sheeple and people?
Yeah.
That's because I meant all of you. We're the ones getting stiffed. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, we got some fun tomorrow. We got the nice try cause of the week coming up.
Good.
And we're going to talk about America's freedoms, such as they are.
Yes.
Because we're losing them.
That's right.
As we speak.
I can't even speak anymore.
Yeah, it's starting to scare me. Good show today, Marin.
You too, Riley.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah,
this
okay.
is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.